My name is Karen. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Karen.
And somebody asked me if I was a teacher because people could hear me in the back of the room. I said, no, I just come from Brooklyn. I'm here as the long timer. I walked into my first OA meeting sometime in the fall of 1975. I was 20 years old. I am 61 years old today. I had come off of a year-long diet at Duke University where I lost a grand total of 3 pounds. What that means is that during the summer I lost 67, and over the year while I was telling my parents that I couldn't come home because I needed to really get it, I managed to gain back all but 3 of the pounds that I had lost. I walked into Overeaters Anonymous because I was at NYU, and rather than go to the library in between classes, I would do things like walk up and down 8th Street in Greenwich Village and go to 3 luncheonettes and eat the same thing, telling people that I was doing a taste test, and when I found the best of whatever it was, I would only eat that one. And if I didn't do that, I was in Gristiti's Food Market scouring the aisles for the new stuff. And I was walking out of Gristiti's one day, and this will tell you how long ago it was. There was this great big oak tag sign that said, do you have a problem with food? And it talked about some meeting, and at the bottom it said, free, 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 no dues, no fees, free, free, free. And the free got me, but I will tell you that I remember, you know, I don't remember a lot about those days because it was a long time ago, but I remember looking at that sign when it said, do you have a problem with food? And my initial response was, I have no problem with food. I have a problem with my weight. Because like so many people that I've met over the years, the fact that I was fat was the issue. It wasn't what I was eating. I had some logical disconnect in my brain that didn't think that what I ate had a whole heck of a lot to do with how big I was. I will tell you right now that the problem with having been in for 41 years is I'm going to skip a lot of stuff because I only have 20 minutes to tell you about 40 years of my life. So that was, you know, that was what got me into the rooms. I walked in. I didn't relate to a lot of what was going on. I had a dollar in one pocket and a token in the other. And so when the basket came around, I put the dollar in the basket because you shouldn't think I'm cheap. And at the end of the meeting, they were selling literature. And I didn't have any more money, so I stole a blue sheet or a gray sheet, and I left the meeting because you know that the only thing that was important on that table was the food plan. And I went back. I was living in my parents' house. They had not decided that I needed an apartment on my own yet. They did. And I walked into the house, and my mom said, how was the meeting? And I turned to her and said, they're all praying to get thin. And I stomped up the stairs. And 10 years later, I told this story to my sponsor, who turned to me and said, oh my God, you got it on the first night. It took me a while. I will tell you that I did not get abstinent that night. I did not get abstinent that year. I got abstinent that decade. But it took from 1975 to about 1979 before I was willing to do anything like 3 meals a day with nothing in between. Had nothing to do with what I was eating. It was just putting a physical stop, because I will tell you that by the time I did that, I weighed 350 pounds. So, in order to lose the first 70 pounds. All I did was I went to meetings, I called my sponsor, and I ate 3 times a day. And it really didn't matter too much what those 3 times a day contained, as long as it had a beginning and an end and a period of X number of hours between, because by the time I stopped eating compulsively, I was eating from the moment I woke up in the morning, and I was at least nibbling the entire time until the time I went to bed, and then I'd get up in the middle of the night and I'd eat something else. That's how you get to 350 pounds. In program, in relapse, I didn't quite get there again, but I got pretty darn close. And I will tell you that for me, what I've learned over the years is the difference between my weight gains in relapse and somebody else who gains 20 pounds and goes, oh my, that those of us who have over 100 pounds to lose have one difference from the people who don't, and that is our ability to play ostrich. Because I wake up one morning and I go, oh my God, how did that happen? Well, the fact of the matter is that I didn't go to bed last night as a size 12 and wake up this morning as a size 24. It doesn't happen that way. What I have is the ability to ignore everything that is going on and anything that is being said. However, so my story basically is one of how do you do it wrong and still keep coming back? And the bottom line is that it has to do with the fact that people in these programs don't judge you to the point of excluding you. Do not think that if you've gained 70 pounds since the last time I saw you, that there's not something going on in my mind going, oh my God, that could happen to me too. Or, oh my God, you know, let me help. Sometimes those things don't come out of our mouths correctly, because I got to tell you that when somebody's in relapse, it scares the hell out of you. However, the one thing I learned in going through it myself was that you can't catch what I have, you've got it already. So, in the year, I stopped, my last binge was January 27th, 1987. But my definition of abstinence through the years has had to change, because what I could eat in 1987 would make me obese today. The one thing about growing older in program is you find that you just can't do it the way you used to do it. You know, the things that worked back then, food-wise, don't work today. The things I work program-wise, working the tools, making sure that I get to meetings, getting I get on a scale once a week. Talking to my sponsor, making sure that I'm reading the OA and AA literature, giving service, are things that always work, because what that does is it makes this program mine. That's the one thing my sponsor told me a long time ago, and my sponsor and I had a really long, complex relationship. I met my sponsor at a workshop that I went to in 1980 when a friend of mine, actually it was 81, talked me into going to this workshop with this funny guy from Phoenix, Arizona, and that was my first introduction to the How concept. The How concept was very different back then. I still work a program that my sponsor taught me in 1981. I weigh and measure in my house. I do not weigh and measure outside of the house. Outside of the house, I eat half portions, because that's what we did back then. I make 3 telephone calls a day. I go to at least 3 meetings a week. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. Not everybody eats the same way that I do. I sponsor people who eat sugar. I will tell you this. However, the one thing that I warn them about is that if they consistently have problems with food, I may suggest that they consider not doing that. But I'm not here to tell you what you're doing is wrong, because God knows anything that you've done wrong in this program, I'm the poster child for it. And today, doing everything wrong for 41 years, I have had imperfect abstinence since January 27th, 1987. I am maintaining a 205-pound weight loss, and what I do today looks nothing like what I did back then, food-wise, but what it looks like are the actions that I take around the food and around that process are the same. And what I've learned is that I love this program because you can do something so different from what I do. And we can both be right. You know, we live in a world where I'm right, which makes you wrong. We're in a program where as long as it's working for you, go for it. If it's not working for you, you may want to look and ask people what they're doing that's working for them, because maybe something like that would help. Last November, my husband came home and said, "Honey, they posted a job in Columbia, Maryland." And I went, "Where's that?" He says, "Baltimore." I went, "All right, you know, you've applied for jobs before, you haven't gotten them, go for it. You know, we're 60 years old, we don't get jobs. You know, new jobs are not in the offing for people of our age." Guess what? He went, he got the job. And so he announced this, and so I love my husband, but he's a compulsive gambler in recovery, which means that sometimes he plays the odds, even when he doesn't think he is. So he left his job on the 21st of March, and he started his new job on the 22nd, and left me in New Jersey with the house to get ready to move, because we have to sell the house. The house is still in New Jersey. We're trying to sell it. It's on the market, thank God. But he moved down, and I proceeded to spend the next 6 months driving back and forth, because I would work here for 2 days, work up there for 2 days, and then work here. And so I was very happy in September to actually find, at that point, a consulting position. And guess what? They do hire 61-year-olds. Because as of the 28th of March, I have a permanent job. Yay. And it's lovely. What happened, I mean, you know, as I said, you know, I just went through 41 years of my life really quickly. Let me tell you that there are people in this world who know me as Karen from Brooklyn, Karen from New York, Karen from Cincinnati, Karen from Toronto, Karen from North Carolina, Karen from New Jersey, and now Karen from Columbia. Some of those were geographic cures. Many of them were not. In each and every location in those 41 years, I have had meetings to go to. The most difficult move, I will tell you, was the move from New York to New Jersey. I did not realize, for whatever reason, that there really was a big gulf between Region 6 and 7. I have served in many capacities in this fellowship, and I felt, you know, like I know everybody. I mean, I know, I sat in a meeting the other day and everybody says I know everybody. I don't. And when I moved to New Jersey, I was going to meetings with people I had never seen before, because I had no roots within Region 7. I go to meetings in New York, or actually if I go to meetings in Florida, because they've all moved down there now, it's like old home week. But when I moved to New Jersey, I didn't know people. My service arms, for whatever reason, had not reached into Region 7 in the same way. But when I announced, because at this point I do service at the region level, I currently serve as the region parliamentarian, which is fabulous. I have no opinion on anything, and I help everybody. I love it. That when I moved, before I moved, there was a region assembly, and I made this announcement. And I could, you know, look at the room and go, okay, within 50 miles of where I'm moving, that person lives, that person lives, that person. Yeah. And so even though it was different, it was the same. And that has to do with, granted, maybe my attitude when I moved to New Jersey wasn't quite as good, but that notwithstanding, we're all in this together. And yes, you know, I've been hanging out a little bit longer, and you know, sometimes I get to be a bit of a policy wonk, and people look at me and they cross their eyes. Or, you know, when somebody says something, you know, I'll give them the history and they'll go, oh God, do we have to hear it again? Overeaters Anonymous is the single thing that I have done longer than anything else, with the exception of being a member of my biological family. I didn't go to school for this long. I've never had a job for this long. I have a couple of relationships, you know, from when I was 5 years old, so I have had friendships this long. But basically, this is the most consistent thing in my life. And for me, I am so grateful, because, yeah, my top weight was 350 pounds. And if I was that today, I wouldn't be here, I'd be dead. The health issues are the health issues. You know, I've got, you know, I look good in clothing. The operative word is in clothing. It's not a pretty sight. Thank God I married a man who loves me no matter what. Because I need to accept everything about myself. And that's over the past few years, you know, that self-acceptance is something that I've had to learn. I walked into this program a 20-year-old who had never had a date. I've been married twice. I lost one husband to cancer. He was somebody I met because my sponsor told me to go to a World Service Convention and hug him. And 10 years later, he turned to me, he says, I told you to hug him, I didn't tell you to him. I said, I didn't, for a long time. But we had a connection of service and a willingness to see each other for what we could be as well as for what we are. And you know, that's one of the most important things I've learned in OA, is that it's not necessarily, you know, it's nice to see where you are today. But what's even more phenomenal is, as you watch people grow, or as, you know, there are people in this room who I've known, well, 30, 40 years, 30? Yeah. There are people who I've seen over the years who can see changes in me and reflect that back to me, and I can reflect those changes back to them. That is something very special. Because we look for the changes in people. We look for the good. You know, it was funny, I was reading something, and I'm going to close with this. You know, when I was in college, my best friend used to call me the voice of doom. You know, because I could see the black in anything. And I don't live that way today. And the reason why I don't is because I know that miracles happen. And the first miracle that I know about every single morning is that I wake up and I don't weigh 350 pounds today. And I don't have to eat compulsively today. I can think about things other than food because I work a program. I have a faith in a power greater than myself that I may not understand. The only thing I do understand is it ain't me. And that as long as I keep coming back, I have a fighting chance. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Mike, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And this is really special. I'm really grateful that I'm getting this opportunity to tell my story. And I was exchanging some messages with Jess about this event. And she said, it's great that you're going to be able to come tell your story. Please consider how the concept of unity plays into your story. And I thought, uh-oh. Because unity strikes me kind of like brushing your teeth or eating your vegetables or driving the speed limit. That's a really good idea as something you should do, but I'm unique and special. I live according to different rules. I don't need to do those stuff. And just to the core of my being, this self-reliance, I got it, I can handle it, I can do it, that attitude is frankly going to kill me. And it's been with me all my life. And part of my story is learning how to let go of that. And I come to OA through AA the way that my life has gone. I've put down things in the order that they've been killing me. And I started with alcohol. And around that time, my mom told me a story about when I was a little boy. And she told me this story because she knew I was trying to do something about my drinking to improve my life, to get better, and she wanted to encourage me. And this was kind of one of those pat on the back stories. And when I was a little boy, we were visiting my aunt and uncle and my cousins, and we were staying with them, and I was about 3 or 4, and my cousin Bill had a bicycle that I was fascinated with, and I was too small to ride it, so all I could do was walk the bike up and down the driveway. But I was fascinated with it, and I loved it, and I'd do that all day long. And my aunt and uncle were out of the house, and my cousins were at school, and I was out there walking the bike, and my parents were sitting down having coffee or something, and they're like, we haven't heard Michael in a while. So they went out, and they looked, and the bike had fallen over on me, and I was so little that my leg was bleeding, and I couldn't get up, and my mom said, but you didn't cry, and you didn't ask for help, and you didn't do anything. And to her, it was an example of my will and the strength of my will, and I thought, oh my God. God, even at that age, I couldn't ask for help. And I thought, I'm screwed. And as life went on, gradually I learned to ask for help. I asked for help with my drinking, and I got it, and it worked wonderful. And I had gained weight steadily through my 20s, and I had assumed it was because I drank so much. I drank so much, and now that I quit drinking, I'm going to lose this weight. Everything's fine. And a year or so went by, and I hadn't. I talked to my sponsor about it, and he said, well, Mike, the only thing that I've had seen people have success with is Overeaters Anonymous. So if you want to do something, that's what I'd recommend that you do. And I thought, that's ridiculous. 12 steps around food, nonsense. I've got this. And so I went about it my way. And I went to a nutritionist, a lot of great suggestions that I didn't follow. I gave up on that. I tried this, that, or the other thing. The weight went up and up and up. Finally, what happened is I fell in love. Oh, so cute. I met a girl at work who I really liked and I cared about. And I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, I was around 300 pounds at the time. I would never get on a scale, but I estimate that's what I was. It may have been a little bit more, but it was in that neighborhood. And I looked at myself in the mirror and said, you can never be a husband or a father or even in a relationship in the shape that you're in. So I started doing something about it, and initially I made some healthy decisions. I looked at what I ate, looked at what the amount was and what my food was, and I changed that, and I began slowly exercising, and the weight started to come off. And it turned out that the woman that I had my eye on, she liked me too. So how about that? And things were going pretty good. But little by little, things started slipping out of whack. My control was not all it was cracked up to be. I would notice that from time to time, I would have my food plan, and when I was upset about something or something was bothering me, I would go off the food plan. And I would remark about this to my doctor or my nutritionist at the time, and I'd say, you know, I'm doing okay, but every once in a while I have these weird things, and what's up with that? And they just kind of look at me and, you know, kind of shake their heads or whatever. And, you know, but I went merrily along because my weight was going down and everything was great, right? Well, not so much. I was very lucky to be with this woman. We married and she got pregnant and we bought a house. And here I was, and I had gotten everything that I wanted in my life. You know, I had overcome my drinking, and I had lost the weight, and I had married the woman of my dreams, and we had a baby on the way, and a new house, and all this wonderful stuff. And I felt lower than I did in my days of drinking. And I just fell through the floor. I just lost my mind. I started into therapy and depression and just all this stuff, and I was just in an awful, awful state of mind. And the healthy choices that I had made with my food and exercise got really obsessive. At one point, I had to have very minor surgery, and it meant that I was off my feet for 2 weeks, that I wasn't supposed to exercise or do anything, and I just flew into a terror, because the way that I felt, that the only way that I felt I could maintain my weight was to exercise like a madman 7 days a week and like count my calories. So I worked out this food plan while I was recovering from the surgery of like, it was only going to be X number of calories. So that meant like I could have half an apple and, you know, all this crazy stuff. And my wife looked at me and she was like, you're getting really weird with this stuff. I've had good luck with this pay and weigh program, and really I think you should try that. And I was so down and feeling so nuts that I gave it a shot. And, you know, basically they taught me a different way to be crazy about counting my food, so yay. And I would go up to the facilitators of these meetings and say, yeah, this counting stuff is great, but I do this thing with cookies, and I kind of eat the whole bag, and what's up with that? And they'd be like, well, just don't do that. Yeah. And I'd look at them and I'd say, well, why don't you die in a fire? And so I gave up on that, and you know, I kept trying to do it myself. Finally, I recovered over the surgery, and it's funny, during this period of time, it was such a chaotic point in my life, and I mentioned not being able to ask for help. So I had this surgery, and then a situation came up where we had all our stuff in storage, and it had to be moved, and I couldn't lift anything. So I tucked my tail between my legs, and I had two close friends of mine that I said, and I'm sorry, I hate to ask you this, but could you please help me move these things because I can't lift anything? And my friends were like, of course, sure. And one of them still reminds me to this day. He's like, Mike, remember that day you had to ask me for help? And I'm like, yeah, it still hurts. But, you know, and that nature of my character. So even going through all this, I still thought, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. Finally, I don't know how that message from my sponsor all those years ago finally entered my ears. This isn't the number on the scale. This isn't the food that you're putting in your mouth. This isn't how many calories are in it. There's something spiritually wrong with you, and the 12 steps is going to be the only answer to this. So I went to my first OA meeting. And I was nervous. I was used to the idea of recovery, but you know, I didn't know how this was going to go. And I got there, and then I heard people talking. It was the Brown's Chapel meeting on Saturday mornings in Reston, and the first big relief was people talked about food the way that I talked about food, and that was a relief, because to this point nobody understood the crazy stuff that I did, and all of you did. And I was grateful for that. The second thing that really hit me was not only that, but the people in these meetings had really good recovery. I could see in their eyes, in the way that they spoke, it wasn't about the number on the scale, it wasn't about the food, it was about the 12 steps and how they worked those 12 steps in their life. And that really hit home, and it took a couple weeks, but I put up my hand and I asked for a sponsor, and there was a man that agreed to work for me. And I had a very hard time letting go of my concepts of a food plan, because I thought that the program, 12 steps, yeah, I understand that, but you know, now this food plan here, I got to get these numbers in the right order. And I really couldn't let go of that. I was also just dealing with some just adjustment stuff in my life. I had lived alone for the majority of my life, and now I had a wife and a small child, and figuring out how to deal with that was not easy. And it was about I was doing therapy, I was doing OA, I was kind of not doing real great for with either of them, but I was putting one foot in front of the other. And my son got to be about 2, and my wife was like, you know, I want another baby. And it was like this cold thing of terror went through me, because I was not, I love my son very much. I'm so lucky to have both my kids in my life, but it was tough. And just, I was filled with terror at like, oh God, I'm just getting my life back together. I'm just doing this stuff in therapy in OA. That's all going to fall apart with the next kid. And those thoughts just kind of went around in my head. You know, I was not really talking to people about those stuff. So all that stuff festered. And I remember it was at my son's second birthday party. And one of the in-laws said, so when y'all going to have another baby? And I was like, ah. And when everybody was gone from the room, I was alone with the treats from my son's party, and I said, to heck with it. Therapy in OA is not going to get me through this. Food will. So I just closed my eyes, and I dove in for the next 2 years. And the next 2 years were awful, with little bits of wonderful. You know, second son was born healthy, 2 healthy guys. Oh my God, I'm such a lucky man. And they really are wonderful. But through all that, just my eating behavior, it was atrocious. I'm, you know, my responsibility in our household is kind of like preparing meals for the family and doing the grocery store. And my wife didn't have easy pregnancies, so there were other things that kind of fell on me while she was laid up. So, you know, one of my routines was go to the grocery store. In addition to the healthy things that I made for my family, I would get my binge foods and kind of make sure to hide the receipt so she wouldn't see that. And I would hide my food in the car. And so she'd go to bed early and then tuck my son in and, you know, good night, honey, I love you, I love you. And then sneak out to the car and get my food and sit in front of the TV and do that. And just, you know, lying to my wife and that deceitfulness just was awful, just an awful feeling. And just there was a moment when I was in the grocery store and I just felt like, Mike, this is like when you used to go in the liquor store. What's up with you? And the fact of the matter is that my weight was increasing. I was like blowing through my clothes, you know. At the end of it, I had like maybe 1 or 2 pair of pants that I could wear, maybe 1 or 2 shirts, and like a couple real big sweaters. So I wore the same darn clothes every day. And this really affected my work. I had started a new job, and it was the kind of job where I really wanted to perform and excel, and I wasn't. When my wife used to go on business travel, I used to like work from home and sit in front of the TV and eat all day. That really led to some good work performance. And it started getting noticed. I mean, for the first time in my professional life in like 10 years, like people weren't happy with my work, and that felt horrible. And it got to the point where I'm like, I need to get out of this job and find something else. I can't interview like this. I was stuck. And I remembered those people at that Brown's Chapel meeting and their good recovery and their wisdom. And I got back to OA meetings. And I started that, I don't remember when. It took me a couple of months to find abstinence. I was going to OA meeting and still doing my nonsense. And finally one day, it was one of those deals where the wife was out of town and I ate all day. And Saturday was grocery store day and I said, you know what? I know how to pick some better foods. Let me do that. And that was my first day of abstinence. And I think that was around February of 2015. So I've got about a year abstinent and I'm so grateful for it. And, you know, I opened with saying, like, that unity kind of struck me like, you know, eating vegetables or flossing your teeth. And the fact is, I haven't taken good care of myself in my life. Most of my teeth aren't mine. My dentist made some suggestions, and I follow them. It turns out that I've learned how to eat healthier, and I actually like vegetables, so I eat my vegetables. I also find that a way to tell my level of serenity is whether or not I'm picking up speeding tickets. And the last time I got a speeding ticket, I was thinking, where are you going? I get to work 2 hours before my coworkers. What, I need to get there 2.5 hours before my coworkers? Slow down. And so I've slowed down. And when I came back to OA, I thought, this is the right thing to do. I believe what these people say. I believe in the 12 steps. I believe I need to do this. It's going to be years before I feel better. And it was funny. It was 2 weeks. And my life started changing in positive ways. And the first thing that happened was the weight started to come off so that I could actually wear clothes that I could go on interviews with. And I found a new job. And the new job is absolutely perfect and wonderful and probably the best job I've had in 20 years. And I'm so lucky to have it. And I am somebody that that still has the idea that I can manage well. That's one of my favorite lines in the Big Book, the delusion that only if he can manage well. And that fits me to the T. And I really desire to put that idea down, because the fact of the matter is, OA is the last house on the block for me. If I don't work this program, if I don't keep the weight off, I got to 300, I'm sure I can beat that. And if I do that, I will die of obesity. That and all the other stuff that I've done in my life in terms of recovery, it does not matter. I have some very close friends in the other program who have had decades of sobriety who died from food. And I've seen it, and I miss those guys. They were important to me. And I want my life to be a different story. And working the steps with regards to food has been truly enlightening. The first step in particular, where I realized I have had problems with food going back to the beginning. It's always been there. I've always had issues with food. And working the steps, it's been tough. I've been working on a fourth step. And I've done a fourth step before. But this time around, it's really getting down to some stuff. The road is getting narrower, and some of this stuff hurts. But the thing that I never forget is, what is the alternative? The alternative for me is death. If I don't do this, I will die. And I'm an isolator by nature. Reaching out to people is difficult for me. And I'm grateful that OA is patient with me, because I need a lot of patience. And I'm slowly learning how to reach out to people and make connection. It just takes time for me. That's all I got. Thank you very much for this opportunity.